Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Carrida. Today is Wednesday, March 18th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. My apologies for being away yesterday. Up and down market, same story, same song and dance. However, we're going to continue our discussion with the primary focus on the markets. The title of today's podcast is The Great Unraveling. And I'm coining this phrase. I have not heard this anywhere. If you have, please let me know. But I have yet to hear this. You know, we've talked about some people coining what might transpire over the coming months and years will be known in the history books as the greatest depression. I've heard a couple people say that, but I have yet to hear anybody call this what we are in the midst of now, the great unraveling. So I'm coining a phrase. Market performance, we're going to talk about at length. What's going on in the treasury market, the debt markets, U.S. dollar, FX, foreign exchange. What some of the central banks are doing, of course, the Federal Reserve, the ECB had an emergency meeting this evening, Reserve Bank of Australia, a whole bunch of other central banks are coming to the fore as we expected. This is no surprise to anybody to put the pedal to the metal. We here in the United States have our federal government stimulus package. We're going to talk about that and how this is all interconnected with what's taking place. And of course, coronavirus, COVID-19, the pin that pricked the everything bubble. So to market performance, at the end of the day, the major indexes here in the U.S., the Dow, the S&P 500, NASDAQ, all rallied at the end of the day from their lows. Still all ended in the red. We had all three indexes given back 4 or 5%, but well off of their lows for the day. The Russell 2000 continues its downward descent as well. At the time of this podcast, we have the futures trading. We have the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ 100 all down. The Dow is down 3%. The S&P 500 is down 3% as well. And the NASDAQ 100 is down 0.7%. The Nikkei, the Japanese markets, are down 2.3%. Across the pond in Europe, we have the UK markets down 4%. The Germans down 5.5%. France down 6.25%. The Italians down 1.25%. The Spanish down 3.33%. Right now, as trading continues in the land down under in Australia, they are suffering another loss. Down 133 points, a loss of 2.7%. The sell-off continues. Shanghai, the Chinese markets, down nearly 3%. The Indian markets down for the day 5.5%. Russia down 5%. The Canadian exchange down almost 8% for the day. And we're going to get to some others here shortly. This is the great unraveling, folks. I mean, again, the speed in which this has occurred is shocking. I mean, it is history in the making. You are witnessing history on a daily basis. And it could be because of a sell-off, or it could be because of a record-breaking bounce back. Because in bear markets, and we are undoubtedly now in a bear market, you have some of the biggest counter rallies take place. So what was it last Friday? What was it or not? You had that 10% rally in one day. Of course, we gave that all back because we are in the midst of a very violent bear market. But those are the types of things that we can see. So don't be surprised if we someday get another 10% rip to the upside. Maybe even greater than that, depending on a news headline, depending on just whatever might take place. People thinking that that's the bottom, the market's capitulated, the algorithms get kicked back on, and now they're in a buy mode for that particular reason. You know, whatever the technical charts might say, whatever, however they're programmed to operate, your guess is as good as mine. Be careful out there. This is uncharted territory. But we have a divergence. We have a divergence. This is something we've been discussing here at length. We talked about trouble in the bond market a few months ago. We talked about the dollar doom loop a couple weeks ago. These are constant themes because it's all connected. These were going to happen anyway. But I think the speed in which they are occurring is a lot faster now because of COVID-19, this massive pinprick of a huge and very, very fragile bubble. And we are seeing it burst across industries, across sectors, across the entire globe. Okay? So when it comes to the bond market, we were talking about, oh my goodness, record low yields across the entire spectrum, from bills to the 30-year long bond, all below 1%. That was, what, a couple weeks ago? We've seen huge sell-offs in the bond market, because remember, price and yield are inversely related. So when you have selling of treasuries, lowers the price, yield goes up. So we are no longer below 1% on the 10-year. We are at 1.25%. That's a big move in the bond market. Okay, that's a big move. The 30-year, I mean, this too, again, was below 1% a couple weeks ago. Now it is at 1.82%. The Federal Reserve has just cut interest rates over the past 2 weeks by 150 basis points. 150 basis points in two emergency meetings, right? $700 billion in a quantitative easing program, discount window, reserve requirements turned to nothing. A, B, C, X, Y, Z, 1, 2, 3. They're pulling out all the stops and these markets continue to go down. The Federal Reserve is trying to get interest rates lower, but the bond market is saying, well, I don't know about this. I mean, at the short end, they're still extremely low. Extremely low. All right? They're at zero for all intents and purposes. Almost in negative territory on the 1 month, the 3 month, and the 6 month. Okay? We're almost there. But on the longer end of the curve, they are starting to rise, and they're starting to rise very, very rapidly. Okay? And the bond market is an extremely deep and liquid market. You don't typically see this type of volatility in the bond market or in the currency markets because they're so deep and they're so liquid. You don't see big moves. You'll see a lot of movement in the stocks, especially now. So this is worrisome to me because the currency market and the bond market make the stock markets look like child's play, okay, as far as size and volume and really the significance. So if the Federal Reserve and other authorities can't get this curve under control, Uncle Sam's going to be in a big problem here. Because Uncle Sam is trying to come to the rescue once again with more bailouts of one industry after the next. And of course, yes, there might be some checks going to the average American. Okay. $850 billion. Then it was $1.2 billion. Now I'm hearing $1.2 trillion. $850 billion, $1.2 trillion, now $1.3 trillion. Remember TARP? A decade ago, Great Financial Crisis? That was what, $700, $800 billion? Now we're in the trillions. Now we're in the trillions. And is that even, quote-unquote, enough to stimulate the economy? There's nothing here to stimulate. This is maintaining. This is no type of stimulus. People are going to be laid off. They're going to be furloughed. Businesses are closed. No customers. They're under government order, depending on your city or state. There is no stimulus. It's maintaining. This is a maintenance program. That's what this is. So $1.2 trillion, $1.3 trillion, right? In phase one, part one, I don't know how many parts or phases of this thing are going to come through, but it's been approved by the House, by the Senate. President Trump signed it, okay? So some wave of the stimulus is going to start making its way through the system. However, Uncle Sam doesn't have the money. We are already on path for a $1.2, $1.3 trillion deficit as is without this additional spending. So where is it going to come from? Right? So Uncle Sam is going to have to issue more debt because he doesn't have the revenue to pay for it to cover it, right? And there's no way that Uncle Sam's going to cut spending somewhere else. Excuse me. Because that would take away, right? That's stimulus. It's spending. We got to keep doing that. Got to keep GDP moving along. So it's $1.2, $1.3 trillion that Uncle Sam is going to have to go out into the Treasury market and say, all right, we're issuing all this debt. Who's going to buy it? Because if you're issuing debt, that's supply, right? If you put more supply of a product, here U.S. Treasuries, onto the market, you lower its price, okay? Unless there's the demand for it. But we're seeing that the demand is not there. We're seeing a sell-off. This is why the yields are going up, especially on the long end, all right? 5, 7, 10 year, the 20 year, 30 year, etc. So if the Treasury issues more debt, which they're going to, that's supply that puts downward pressure on the price. Inversely related, the yields go up. So who's going to buy it? Because we have emerging markets selling their treasuries. We have larger countries selling their treasuries because these countries have debts coming due and they're dollar denominated. So they are short U.S. dollars. So they need to sell their U.S. treasuries to recoup U.S. dollars so that they, in turn, can go around and pay their debts, right? Because so many of these countries issue dollar-denominated debt because investors don't trust these respective countries with their respective domestic currencies. A lot of investors aren't going to take the risk if they're going to be paid back in South African rands or Nigerian Niras, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're just not going to take it, or they're really going to have to be compensated. Now, what compounds the problem with this dollar shortage is the fact that in the FX markets, the way currencies are traded, they trade relative to each other. So the U.S. dollar is strengthening at a time when these countries need dollars. So it's going to take more of their domestic currency to be swapped out to pay their dollar debts. At a time when you have a global pandemic, you have a global price war in the price of oil, and we're going to get to the commodities markets here shortly, and you have a global economic slowdown. And remember, folks, this global economic slowdown was happening before COVID-19. It was happening before the price oil war. Okay? Or the oil price war, I should say. That was the pinprick. It exacerbated the problem. The oil war exacerbates the problem, etc., 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 down the line. And it's not just other countries, right, that have debts coming due. It's also corporations, major corporations. And we've talked about this. We've seen this massive sell-off in equities. We're now starting to see massive sell-offs in the bond market, especially on the longer end of the curve. Who's going to get bailed out? Is it going to be the corporations? Is it going to be Uncle Sam? Central banks? Who is going to get bailed out here ultimately? You know, maybe a decade ago you could save the banks, a couple hedge funds, what have you, and that was it. Now it's everywhere. Now it's at the government level. And the government is going to save themselves before they go out and start saying industry after industry after industry. We shouldn't be saving industry after industry after industry to begin with. We've been down this road. The airline industry asking for $50 billion in federal assistance. Why don't you issue your shares? Why don't you issue more stock onto the market? See what investors are willing to pay for it. I mean, why should these executives, these companies who mismanage their cash flow because they took the signal from the federal government, from the Federal Reserve, and other federal governments and central banks the world over of easy, cheap money. So it doesn't cost me anything. I have a very low hurdle rate. And I can do some financial engineering. I can go into the market. I can buy our shares back with all of these share buybacks. I can artificially increase our share price. I'm an executive. My compensation is tied to the performance of the underlying share price. Easy peasy, easy money. Now I'm going to get paid handsomely, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars per year. See how this is working, folks? And now they are lining up before the government asking for $50 billion. The nerve these people have. This is not free market capitalism. This is a complete takeover. Complete takeover. Mr. President, you've said it multiple times. So long as you are president, this country will never be a socialist nation. Well, if you start taking a stake in all of these companies and bailing all of them out, what does that sound like, sir? It most definitely is not free market capitalism. So you let me know your definition. You let me know. This is unbelievable. Do you people understand what this means? Do you understand this process that we are just getting started with this massive, great unraveling in the bond market, unless somehow the Federal Reserve can get control over this? I don't think that's likely because of the amount of debt that has been created over the past decade. $700 billion in quantitative easing ain't going to cut it. Ain't going to cut it. Emergency meeting this evening with the European Central Bank. I think they're doing about almost the same. Almost the same. Of course, that'll be in euros. To do whatever it takes. We're going to do whatever it takes. We are committed to supporting and defending the euro. Remember, folks, I've been saying here for a long time, I imagine when all dust is settled, that the experiment of the European Union will crumble, that the euro will basically cease to exist, and then in the short term, we're likely to see the U.S. dollar and the euro reach parity. So $1 for 1 euro, okay? I've been saying that for quite a while. I still believe it, especially in this type of situation. Right now, as we're doing this podcast, I just had a headline come across that the Reserve Bank of Australia has cut interest rates. They were also to record lows. I think it said 0.25%, an all-time record low. And they will be also engaging in some sort of debt buying program as well, a quantitative easing of theirs as well. This is not a surprise. This is a coordinated effort just to keep markets afloat, or at least give the appearance that they're doing something. This was the problem. You understand? These actions, these stimulus programs, these emergency meetings among central bank after central bank, and what they conclude and what they end up implementing is not the solution. It is the problem. That is what led us to where we are today. Easy money, easy credit, no hurdle rate to capital. Everybody takes a miscue from the price because money's cheap. It's easy. I'm going to go borrow. I can easily lend it. I'll easily get it. I'll go start a business. I'll go produce something. And now we have overcapacity. We have oversaturation in so many areas, which is a decent segue right now to the commodity market. Because, I mean, just talk about getting slammed, right? We have crude oil. We have WTI trading at $22 a barrel. $22 a barrel. We have Brent, the international metric, at $25.44 a barrel. So typically you have a wider range between the price of WTI and Brent. It's starting to narrow. That spread is starting to narrow. Natural gas, $1.75 per million British thermal units. Gasoline is at like almost a record low. I'd have to look back, but I mean, it's at 0.675 cents. 0.67. Well, I'm sure way back in the day it was lower. Gold, silver, what's going on here? Same thing. Not as much a flight to safety. Still margin calls on all of these stocks, of course. So people have to sell their winners where they were making profits, which was in the safe haven, precious metal space, to cover their losses in the stock market, these margin calls. Plus, you have a dollar that is on a tear here because of the reasons we just stated. But we have gold down 1%, almost 1.5%, trading at $1,473 an ounce. We have silver down almost 2%, trading at $12. Let's just call it $12 even. Ladies and gentlemen, I am still of the mindset that we are in the setup of a great long-term bull market when it comes to gold and silver and other precious metals. I mean, gold is definitely going to be viewed as a precious metal. Silver, it could still be viewed as a hybrid between a precious metal and an industrial. I think once some of this dust settles and people have to allocate some of their cash, I think they're going to end up putting it in gold and silver, amongst some other places. That's my opinion. I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I don't give advice here. I give information. So you have to do what you think is best for your portfolio. But it's definitely a part of diversification, a hedge, and it can survive. I mean, gold and silver can both survive and thrive in an inflationary environment for certain. And even historically speaking, they can survive and thrive even in a deflationary environment. So it's part of that basket because you don't know what's going to happen. There's so much decoupling. This great unraveling is just, I mean, it's really history in the making, and there's no other way to put it. We have copper at $2. Copper is at $2. I mean, just think about all of the companies that are dependent on higher prices, right? Better margins, better pay, keep cash flow coming in, service your debts, pay your employees, operation expenses, all that jazz, right? That's how you operate a business. Commodity after commodity, price after price is going down, down, down. It creates a very dangerous downward spiral. We're almost at the point of full capacity when it comes to storage for oil and gas. And I came across an interesting article today where there are some analysts in this space that think you could have a negative price for oil because of the cost that it'll take to store it. Okay, you're not going to see an actual negative price on the exchange, but you get what I'm saying. The cost to store it, given the price it might fetch in the market, if it goes down, say, another $10, you're basically at a negative price. Very fascinating. And it is possible. It is possible. Because if the dollar continues to strengthen, commodities will continue to weaken because you have that relationship, unless, of course, that gets broken in this great unraveling. Time will tell. But you continue to have your oil war, particularly between Saudi Arabia and Russia. That will adversely affect many, many nations the world over. A lot of these countries that we've discussed here many times, but I have to repeat it because I've said this multiple times too, that these global protests are not transitory, but history in the making. And that's what it's proving to be. And a lot of these countries where they are protesting are countries that are highly dependent on the oil and gas markets. So they're already squeezed. They're getting squeezed further. You can imagine what's going to happen. The tension buildup, the anxiety, the frustration, people starving, their children starving. People are going to do what people are going to do. They're going to try to survive. And they are going to hold their governments accountable. Because in large part, their governments are to blame. So do not be surprised if you see more civil unrest, if you see more civil war or all-out war in certain regions. I hope I am wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But if history is any guide, and I try to use history as a springboard to provide context to pretty much everything I do here, well, then it tells me that that's what we're likely to see. I'm not here to scare people or to cause panic. I'm here to educate people to the best of my ability as I see it. You can agree with me, you can disagree with me. That's what this podcast is about. That's what our society is about. Sharing ideas, hopefully educating people in the process. I don't know everything. You don't know everything. I share some of my information. You share some of yours, and together we can put some of the best ideas together. Because we have a long way to go. Whether it's in these dollar debt doom loops, whether it's still waiting for Moody's and S&P to start downgrading companies, which they are now. We have Occidental Petroleum, which just went through a big merger and acquisition a few months ago, is now been downgraded, I think, by Moody's. You now have some of the airlines, I believe it was Delta, who was potentially on the chopping block to be downgraded by one of them. I can't remember if it was Moody's or S&P. But you have to understand, we've talked about this too. This was going to happen. It was just a matter of time because these ratings agencies, they have their credibility on the line to some degree because they completely screwed the pooch in the great financial crisis in the lead up to it. Because they were, I mean, everything was triple A. Everything was fine. There was no risk. You can't lose, baby. Buy it. It's triple A. Well, that wasn't the case, was it? So I think there was a little, you know, all right, mea culpa, we did bad, we shouldn't have done that. We didn't fully understand all of this highfalutin math that they were pulling out of their you-know-where on Wall Street. And by the way, Wall Street pays us, you know, for the rating, so it benefits them if they're AAA, so we're going to stamp it AAA because it benefits us because we're going to get paid, okay? All right, well, this time around, they said, well, not so fast. You know, we got scolded, there's regulations, we're not going to play that game again. Best we can do for some of you is to rate you triple B, okay? Not AAA, but triple B. One grade above junk status, all right? So now we have a mammoth load of debt on corporate balance sheets that are rated triple B in an environment where we are heading into a recession, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The question will be the length, the duration, the severity. I do believe this could turn into a depression. Those out there who have been saying this could be classified as the greatest depression, I happen to agree with them, to be perfectly honest with you, that that is likely going to happen. We cannot stop the air coming out of this bubble, which we are witnessing on a daily basis with historical speed and size. This is a double, triple, quadruple whammy, depending on the market, depending on the situation you are talking about. So it's only a matter of time before we start to see other downgrades from Moody's, S&P, and Fitch, all of them. One company after the next, whether it's going to be retail, energy, the airlines, hospitality, tourism, whatever it's going to be, they are going to start coming because nobody's going to believe it. The markets are already, you know, they're already sniffing it out with some of the ETFs that are involved with the investment grade bonds, the junk bonds, JNK, high yield, HYG, all these types of ETFs. They're getting shellacked because the markets, the investors know what's coming. Markets are forward looking, right? But do the markets fully understand? And I do not believe that they do, that the vast majority of people still think that this is just some sort of run-of-the-mill type thing. This is just, okay, letting the air out. We'll be fine. We saw this in the fourth quarter of 2018, and then we saw this huge V-shaped recovery, yada, yada, yada. The Federal Reserve's out of ammo. Donald Trump can BS a trade deal. He can't BS science. Okay, it's not the same situation. It's not. And we're further along in time, which means we're closer and closer to debt maturities, particularly on the corporate balance sheet side of things. Now, before, these corporations were able to continuously roll over their debts, roll over their debts, roll over their debts. And so they gave the appearance that they were stable, they were functioning, there was an economy in place. It was a mirage because it was all built on credit and debt. Not real. But now if they start to do that, if they attempt to roll over their debts, they're going to have to pay a higher rate because it's junk now. And the markets are perceiving it as junk, even if some of it isn't technically rated as such, because they know what's coming. So how many of these companies are going to be able to survive, especially the marginal players in any industry, but particularly I'm talking about the energy sector here in the U.S., which has been really a boon for many, many parts of this country, either directly or indirectly because of some of the tertiary or secondary and tertiary businesses that are allowed to spring up with your supply chains, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's all unraveling in this great unraveling. Are they going to be lining up to Uncle Sam asking for money? Because we know that the Trump administration loves energy, drill baby drill. We're energy independent. We don't need them and they don't need us. And it's great. Isn't everything fantastic? Well, perhaps if it wasn't on the back of so much debt and credit, then yeah, I could get on board with that. But it wasn't. That wasn't the case. It was on the back of so much debt and credit. $22. $25. $1.75 for natural gas. And it's been there. And it could go lower. Because a couple of reasons. You have the oil war. So supply continues to flood the market. And you have a continuation of less and less demand. It is the perfect storm for something to blow up somewhere. And it's just a matter of time before we really start to see that blow up. But if you look at some of the leading indicators of the market that I still believe ring true, despite the fact that a lot of people thought they were broken before, but we still clung to our belief that that was going to be the case, or cling to our belief, being the Russell 2000, the small cap index, and the Dow Jones transports, right? In conjunction with the cash freight index. Well, I think those portions of the market are sniffing out the bankruptcies. Because a significant portion of companies that are already publicly listed, I think about 40%, are unprofitable. That was before this event. 40% of listed companies were unprofitable before this event. So how is it going to get any better? And what the Federal Reserve has done to this point has kept the pipes lubricated to allow the system to continue to function. Not on solid ground. We haven't been on solid ground in a very, very long time in this country, in this world of high finance and central bank money printing, and you know it. But that's all it is right now. Their balance sheet, if they want to calm the markets, I think they're out of ammo, and I don't even think this would work. But from the standpoint of math and diminishing marginal returns, if they wanted to get any type of kick, they're going to have to double the size of their balance sheet. In conjunction with the Trump administration and Congress coming out with probably an additional $1 trillion, if not an additional $2 trillion, which would take it to $3 trillion, plus the Federal Reserve doubling their balance sheet. So you're talking $4 trillion from the Federal Reserve, $4.5 trillion, plus a $2 or $3 trillion from the federal government. So you're talking $6, $7, $7.5 trillion just to maybe calm the markets down. Maybe. And could you imagine if they came out and said, oh, we have to do $7 trillion worth of monetary and fiscal stimulus? That could cause a huge panic. Right? Because I think the Federal Reserve over the weekend thought, well, if we get ahead of this, because it was supposed to be today, recall, ladies and gentlemen, Federal Open Market Committee, have their meeting, announce what they were going to do. No, didn't happen, right? They had that emergency meeting over the weekend. Perhaps thinking, well, we're ahead of it. We're trying to do our best. Didn't work. Markets sold off the following day. Black Monday Jr., right? Just talked about that. And we talked about the bailouts that continue. Boeing. Looking for $60 billion. $60 billion. That's almost as much as they bought back, too, in their shares. Their share buyback program over the past several years was about that as well. Yet they're lining up for assistance. And I've seen articles where I didn't see Larry Kudlow specifically say this, but I've come across articles. Larry Kudlow saying, yeah, we're contemplating maybe taking an equity stake in some of these companies if they need bailed out. Are you kidding me? An equity stake? In the United States of America? That we're nationalizing industry after industry after industry? Where is the money coming from? I just went through this with you guys of how this is going to work. They're going to flood the market with treasuries. It's going to decrease the price. It's going to spike the yields. Unless the Federal Reserve can somehow buy up the whole curve. And you're talking debt monetization. You're talking not a constitutional republic built by the likes of George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, but a banana republic like Cuba, like Zimbabwe, like Venezuela. And the list goes on and on. What a shame. What a travesty. I mean, this country is all but dead. Put a tag on the toe of Uncle Sam and write down the time. I mean, this is it. And nobody's complaining about it because there's a convenient cover story. Well, there's a global pandemic, which there is. I'm not downplaying it. This audience knows this. I was one of the first out there to say, yeah, this might be something. A lot of people I listen to Say, ah, this is nothing. I got to pay attention. I said, I don't think so. I'm going to have to disagree, respectfully disagree with these guys and gals on this one. And unfortunately, I've been proven correct that this is something serious. And again, it's not because of the mortality rate, although it could turn out to be, because you, again, have to understand exponential growth. And we did a podcast on that. And if you want a good lesson on exponential growth, you can buy our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, because everything in there is about exponential growth. It's very difficult for people to see and to understand that 2 turns into 4, 4 turns into 8, 8 turns into 16, etc., etc. But when you look at 2 and 4 and 8, you say, oh, those are small numbers. We ain't got to worry about nothing. Right? Even Trump. There's only 15 people. They're all going to get better. Nobody's going to die. 2 weeks later, over 8,000 have it, and over 100, I believe, have unfortunately passed away. And you know the number's a lot higher than that because we haven't been testing. So wait till those test kits really make their way out into the market, out into the general population, and you're going to see the problems that we have. We have not seen a peak. It's still going to take a while, unfortunately. But that's the reality of it. Those are the numbers. That's math. It will tail off. You don't have an infinite exponential curve. It will tail off. It will flatten out. That will happen. And now with some of these more these stricter measures, closing borders, shelter in place, this containment, that containment, no more than 10 people here, no more than 50 people there, it will have an effect. The social distancing, all that stuff. Okay, it will have an effect, but we have to abide by it because you have to understand you got to keep yourself safe and you got to keep your family, friends, and community safe. Because you might have a healthy immune system, but maybe your grandmother doesn't or your next door neighbor doesn't. We have an obligation to and for each other in these types of situations. And again, not just the mortality rate of how many people might pass away, but how much stress and strain does this put on doctors and nurses and hospitals and other healthcare facilities? What's the stress, right? Because we know the numbers. We know we don't have enough IC units in this country. Not enough hospital beds to take care of this if those numbers really start to take off exponentially. Because we know some of those high-risk measures, being older, diabetes, smoking, I would have to assume other heart-related conditions, other pulmonary-related conditions, asthma, emphysema, cancer, I'm sure doesn't help. And I'm sure people who are addicted to drugs with the opioid epidemic is no help either. Well, that's a unfortunately, in this country, that's a significant portion of the population who would be, I guess, determined or classified as high risk. So a country of 330 million people, I mean, you do the math, you break it down. So it is serious. It has shut down entire industries. It's not good. We're going to get some employment figures out this week. They are not going to be pretty. And it's just getting started. It's just getting started because, you know, we've just put on these types of measures to shelter in place, to quarantine, to close schools down, to say you can't go to restaurants or bars, order takeout, etc., etc. So the real numbers are going to come out next month as to how bad March is. And then we're very likely to enter a technical recession over the next 2 quarters, if not further. And I do imagine it could be further because we are told continuously by the Trump administration that there is a ton of pent-up demand, right? That's the key words. This stock market, this economy is going to take off like it never has before once we get this thing under control. And this is just the first wave, ladies and gentlemen. And if you understand some of the epidemiology history, I guess you could say, these types of pandemics don't just typically have one wave. They usually have 2 or 3. But hopefully that's not the case. But just so you understand and are aware of that. But this pent-up demand, it's nonsense. It's bogus. We've debunked it here many a times. Okay? You're taking a vacation, you're taking a vacation. You're either taking it in January or you're taking it in August, right? You're not going on another one. You go out to eat, you're ordering one entree. You're not going to make up for all of the other times that you didn't go. You go out to a bar, you have a couple drinks, you're probably not going to buy a few bottles. It's just not how it works. So that would be your quote-unquote pent-up demand. And if you have it with people who are not working and are not earning a wage, well, then you really don't have pent-up demand because they can't afford to go out and spend anything. And right now, even if we give every American $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever it's going to be, by the time they're done with this, and God only knows where that's going to be, they can't go out and spend it. Unless everything's going to be online shopping, which removes a lot of businesses because a lot of businesses are not online or they don't offer a product that is online. They don't have it. So it is a made-up story once again. And it's no surprise because there's no truth-telling. There's no leadership, and we are witnessing that. The only leadership, again, in my opinion, are the people who are protesting in the streets around the world. Of course, that's taken a back seat because they're not allowed to be in the streets. How convenient that is too, isn't it? This is the great unraveling. You're going to hear me say this many, many times over as we make our way through this. But that's what it is, the great unraveling. We covered market performance. I hope you understand how the treasury market is what you have to pay attention to. The debt markets, corporate debt, sovereign debt coming due, how this is putting upward pressure on the U.S. dollar, affecting the foreign exchange markets, and rinse, repeat. I hope you understand that cycle. If you don't, find trouble in the bond market. I think I did one that was titled Dollar Doom Loop, and re-listen to this one, and I think you'll get a good understanding of the cycle. Central banks, again, emergency measure with the Federal Reserve, pulling out some additional programs that they have not utilized since the financial crisis, the ECB having an emergency meeting, and the Reserve Bank of Australia engaging in quantitative easing and lowering their interest rates to an all-time record low. Federal stimulus packages, the coronavirus, and industry after industry looking for a bailout. This is not, ladies and gentlemen, this is not the United States of America. This is not free market capitalism. This is not our constitutional republic. This is a shame. And I hope you understand that. And I hope you make your opinions and your voice known and clear to your respective congressmen and senators. Because we cannot become the bailout nation. We cannot allow the memory of our founding fathers and so many other men and women who have sacrificed for this country to be lost in vain because of terrible, fraudulent, corrupt, and I say illegal, immoral, unethical policies that we have been implementing and implementing and implementing for generations. For it to be basically flushed down the toilet, and that's it. This is a true shame. It's a disgrace. Where's the leadership? So I hope you write your congressmen and your senators and you demand that these industries are not bailed out. You tell them to listen to the Capitol News. You tell them to call me, email me if you can't explain what I say to this audience on a daily basis, and I will gladly do it because they're going to be getting letters from me, if not personal visits, because we cannot stand for this. We cannot stand for bailout nation. Can't do it. There is no nation if everything's bailed out. There is no civility. There's no reason to have money. And we'll talk about that maybe later in this week, depending on what transpires in the markets. But this is beyond ridiculous. We're supposed to be leaders. We're supposed to adhere to our founding principles. We have the blueprint. We have the blueprint. Have we always lived up to it perfectly? No, we haven't. We're human beings. We're not perfect. But we have the blueprints, and it's a beautiful one. It's called the Constitution of the United States. And we have free market capitalism. We just need to have faith in our Constitution, and we need to have faith in free market capitalism, which means at the end of the day that we have faith and confidence in each other because this is supposed to be a government of, by, and for the people, not for the corporations, not for the politicians, not for the well-connected. The great unraveling. Please like, share, subscribe. Get the word out. Leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay safe out there, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.